Live from Studio H3 and the Current Affairs World Headquarters, it's Current Affairs, your ear's most immolating hour of politics and culture. Tonight on the program, it's voicemails. We accept your irksome hissings, we consume them, we digest them, and we excrete our responses right back out in your direction. Tonight, these include office pets, the idea of the self, whether lefty ideas are childish, and some surprises too. Do you have something to say? Do you have a question to ask? Do you want to know what we think of the afterlife? Whether it matters if we're in a simulation? Do you want to know about Current Affairs' corporate structure? About Nathan's shoes? Do you want to state your views on the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo? If you ever feel so inclined, you too may send us your morsels to masticate. Just call 504-867-8851.
That was worse than the poop
one. That's 504-867-8851. We would love to hear from you. Your panel tonight. We have got Lieutenant Editor Brianna Renix.
Hi, guys.
Managing and Amusements Editor, I'm so sorry, Lyta Gold.
I'm sorry about me too. It's fine.
We've got Resident Zoomer Kate Gothrow. Gothrow? Did I do it wrong?
The H is silent.
Gothrow. Oh, fuck. Okay. Resident Zoomer Kate Gothrow. I'm sorry, Kate.
Hello.
And the Editor in Chief himself. What kind of shoes are you wearing, Nathan?
I'm shoeless.
Shoeless today.
I'm barefoot in the office. I don't wear shoes in the office.
He's wearing a full velvet jacket right now and no shoes. I just want everyone to know that.
It occurred to me that Nathan never shows foot. Nathan never shows
feet. Yeah. He never posts feet.
That's true.
That is true. That's a fact.
At 150,000 followers, Nathan will post foot.
Okay, let's just get this rolling here. Let's start with the first voicemail.
Hi, my name is Imran, and I'm a longtime fan of the magazine and all of the wonderful editors, contributors, and staff who work there. The first article I ever read from you guys was the Why the Hamilton Musical Sucks piece, and I've been hooked ever since. I've been fortunate enough to be able to work from home since the pandemic, and my Calico Kitty has been a wonderful support and companion to me during this period of social isolation. Some of you guys might have even seen her, since I like to post pictures of her with my copies of the magazine on the Facebook group. So my question to you all is, what is the Current Affairs position on office cats? And does Current Affairs magazine have an office cat? And if not, why not? I've been trying to convince management at my own office to have an office cat. I've read some articles about how some companies, like mostly in Japan, have allowed them and how they've managed to help workers deal with stress and long hours. And also, I'm a lawyer, sorry. And one of the sadder things that I've noticed is that while relatively well-paid workers like me get to work from home, there are a few lower-paid staff who have to come to the office every day to process mail or scan documents and things. And while I actually think our firm is doing a good job compensating them for this and ensuring their safety is not compromised, one of the problems I've noticed is that they're often very alone in the office with no one to talk to. And I think office cats would greatly help workers out like this, and that introducing more animals to workspace would greatly improve people's lives, in addition to more pay. What are you guys' thoughts?
Okay, office cats. What
Can
do
I
we
just
think?
Note, I've seen this cat, his cat, because in the aviary, and it is a gorgeous cat. And he also has a beautifully decorated living room with like very tastefully arranged copies of Current Affairs on the coffee table. The cat is like a model. It's stunning.
I'm going to find pictures of the cat right now. What color are they?
It's a multicolored
calico. He said, right?
Yeah, calico. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but also we have to have thoughts about it, I guess.
Yeah, the question.
Oh, hold on. I've been trying to get Current Affairs to get an office pet. I don't know, Nathan. Do you remember what I wanted to get? I think I just said I just want a class pet. I don't really think I specified like what kind. I think that I thought some kind of rodent, and then Nathan thought maybe like a bird.
Oh, yes, you wanted a rodent.
And you wanted a bird?
I think that that just like made sense. And then Allegra thought just like absolutely fucking not.
How about a winged snake? Right down the middle.
I think for the Current Affairs World Headquarters expansion, we should just include a mangrove swamp so that our office pet could be a manatee.
Yes.
Office gardens, I think, are also important. I think office pets, and I also believe strongly, if we had the ability here. Well, we have a little courtyard. We have kind of an office garden.
It's really sweet, and I'm the only one who uses it. Literally, the receptionist that works at the front of our office, anytime they do something, they're like, we fixed up your courtyard. Because it just goes in the courtyard. I'm like, oh, thank you so much.
I'm kind of confused at why more places don't let people bring their own pets. It seems fine. I don't know. I've had one job that let me bring my dog, and it did poop my boss's office one time.
You have no idea why.
Which wasn't great.
People would.
But other than that, it was very, very useful and very
pleasant.
Because
animals are chaos agents. You're introducing chaos to what is an intensely regulated environment. An animal is this unpredictable.
To be fair, people are also chaos agents.
People are also chaos agents.
People can be disciplined. Animals are ungovernable.
People should be disciplined is what I'm hearing. They should be good, efficient workers.
I'm saying there's a reason the boss doesn't want animals. And it's because it would be the beginning of the end for the workplace hierarchy.
Well,
my previous job, only my boss got to bring his dog.
Oh, shit.
So that was
That's
not
super
fair.
Fucked
the dog
up.
Was very cute, and he only brought her like once a month. And she had little outfits, and I only got to see him like once
outfits.
A month.
Outfits?
She was so cute. Little white dog. It was great.
So, Nathan, are you saying that you are opposed to current affairs office pets?
No, I'm saying I'm in favor of it. Okay. I'm saying that any good workplace, I totally support the scheme. I think office pets are a vast improvement. I want a cat. The only problem here is that a cat would roam. Lots of other offices in the building. But office pets? Yeah.
And give you severe allergic reactions also.
Oh, and also I'm seriously allergic to cats. And I have not yet found medication that helps.
It's a minor detail.
I was actually thinking about going to stay with Eli in Chicago for a couple weeks in April, and I don't think it's going to happen, but I was like, who will take care of my cat, Rue? And then I was thinking about how Nathan has been wanting cats, and I was like, maybe he can take care of Rue as like a test drive. And I completely forgot that you're allergic.
Don't do it.
Your cat is the fluffiest of the, it's in the highly fluffy category. Your cat is also mean, so I don't really...
Wow.
That would give you like the authentic cat experience. It was for you. It was supposed to be a learning experience for you. It was supposed to be like your crash course in cat having. But yeah, that's not the best idea.
Nathan starts showing up at podcasts like heavily swollen with like scratch marks across his face. Like, the situation has deteriorated.
No, I mean, as far as office pets go, I actually have been like recently for the past couple months been wanting to foster a small dog. And wanted to be able to bring it to the office. I really only wanted to get one if I could bring it to the office with me, because I know that this is like a really eccentric opinion, but I think it creates our dog prison, and I would never put my critter in one.
Ooh, gonna spark some controversy with that one.
Well, no, because I've been like lucky enough to have dogs that are just like super chill and will literally just like lie in the same spot for 9 hours and like be exactly where you left them when you come back. But yes, you can be opposed to that. So I am a proud dog prison abolitionist, and I didn't want to put my critter in jail when I was in the office. So I wanted to bring it to work with me. And Allegra, who's like decidedly not a dog person, although she's like very amenable and sweet, was like, oh, it's in our lease, no dogs. Like, I guess it's you know, our landlord is a lawyer and it's in the lease, it's no dogs. And I was like, Nathan and I were both like, but he's a New Orleans lawyer, which is a different kind of lawyer. Really does not
the text,
give a fuck about it.
The text matters a lot less than social relations in Louisiana. We have good social relations with the landlord. Well, one aspect of this to discuss that is a little bit political is there is the horrific Silicon Valley thing of like, let's make the workplace lovely with beanbags. Right. So the caller was talking about how some people have to come in to the office and some people don't. Why don't we give the people who have to come into the office cats? Now, I agree they all deserve cats. But, you know, we should keep sight on the fact that giving a person a pet to have while they're trapped in the office is a band-aid on the ultimate problem that some people are vastly more free than others. And if an office is not the environment conducive to you, your work, you shouldn't have to be in an office any more than you want to.
Let me propose this: universal cats for all. Every office, every workplace has a cat.
Is it mandatory? Mandatory.
It's mandatory. There might be a couple environments where that's not a great idea. There's like, you know, equipment around and stuff because they get into everything. But yeah.
Cats everywhere except where there's equipment.
Yes. Well, cats can be train conductors, actually. They just have to be in the right spots. You know, in Japan, there's a cat train conductor. But I'm going to make a little pitch here for cat, why I think we should have meta cats for all. And so there's a theory about how cats domesticate themselves, not proven, but it's a theory that cats, again, domesticated themselves. They weren't domesticated like dogs. That they moved in as soon as humans started storing grain because there were lots of pests like, you know, mice and rats. And so they just moved in. They're like, oh, it's a good food source. And then humans were like, this rules. You should stay and we'll pet you. And they were like, this is fine. But that's part of why cats are like so, again, like dogs are probably bred from captured wolves, like, you know, but cats are like independent assholes because they moved in and they made these choices. Cats are naturally suited to moving in on humans' territory and just like being useful or adored or both. And I think it's a very natural relationship. We should encourage this. Again, very few situations where, you know, there's like, it's a lot of people get anxious about food safety, and that's why there's like, you know, bodega cats that get cracked down on every now and then. But every bodega should have a cat because you have the rat problem. They're good to have. And in New York, you really should have a cat in every room of every building.
Can I also make a pitch that if you need to go to a meeting with your boss, having a small captured wolf that is loyal only to you, who will stand next to you and growl at your boss during the meeting, could be very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like everything that we've talked about so far has been kind of about like friendly office pets. Or, I mean, I don't know if I'd characterize cats as friendly, but yeah, no,
that's
agree.
That's what's so great about them.
Either one of our dogs, Renix, would be excellent in any kind of adversarial situation.
Yes. We both have dogs who are assholes, just to be clear.
I want Abby and Bodhi on my side. If Nathan ever calls me into a very serious talk, I want those hounds on my side. On either side of me.
Two tiny little aggressive asshole dogs.
Hopefully they won't get distracted fighting each other, but you know, we'll just have to see how it
That's
goes.
True. A common enemy might unite them. Okay, on to the next.
Hey, Pete and Nathan and Brianna and I guess whoever else is on this episode. Saw the tweet, thought it was an interesting idea, so figured I'd call. I'm Robbie from New York. My question is, I guess something I'm frustrated about the most is whenever it feels like in public discourse, whenever like a leftist idea is presented or something that could be genreified as a socialist policy is presented to people or a diverse group of people, it usually gets shut down as like childish and too unrealistic. And that just seems to be a gut reaction by so many people. And part of me and my mind and my thinking jumps to like, okay, everyone's just traumatized by the Cold War. But I was wondering if I could get your guys' thoughts. I mean, like, the magazine gives me life. I love the podcast. It just feels like an oasis of creative political thinking in whatever hellfire, sulfur, maelstrom we're living through right now. I'll probably leave a more coherent voicemail another time, but if this question was clear enough, please shoot. Go ahead and answer it. Thanks. Robbie from New York. Bye.
I want to say Robbie actually did leave another voicemail, but it was a, like related to MMT, and I don't want to. So we're going to do this one. Okay. Thank you, Robbie, for your two voicemails.
Let's use the one that he calls our magazine life-giving oasis.
This is a very nice one. So the question is how to deal with this kind of accusation that as lefties that we're naive or our ideas are childish, our policies are childish. I picked this one because I think that one or two of you may have interesting takes on it. What do you think?
It is childish and children are often right.
Yes. Yes. That's the take I was hoping for.
Well, you know this now that you have a child of your own. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, you know, adolescents are always like, why do I have to do things? And why do people get to tell me what to do? And, you know, why is society structured in these really stupid ways? This is bullshit. They're correct. That is the correct attitude. They're always right. That's why they're cool. We understand. This is why teenagers are like inescapably cool. People only get like bullshit and boring when they become adults and they're like, oh, I'm just gonna go to work with my briefcase and just do normal stuff. I'm gonna walk by a homeless person on the street and not even think about it. You know, that's the person who sucks, and we all recognize that that's the person who sucks. So yeah, sometimes people come at you and be like, oh, it's unrealistic that people should not be miserable all the time, and you're like, if you accept that mindset, then nothing ever changes, and it's always just the guy in the briefcase walking past the homeless person. Nothing to be done. It's nonsense. The world has changed a lot. Things are very different now than they used to be. Things change all the fucking time. It is absurd to pretend that, like, life goes on the way that it will continue to go on this way forever.
So adultish should be the pejorative, and yes. When you're acting like Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, he is the perfect adult. That's exactly what he is.
Well, children are like Chomsky's Martian, right? Like, they're totally denaturalized. Like, they don't accept any of your assumptions. And that seems really valuable.
And it's maddening, right, to argue it's infuriating. With a child, because you realize that you can't justify most of the things that you believe.
Yeah. Now, I do want to come in and say children are also insane and sometimes sociopathic. So, is that.
Right, yeah.
Well, so are leftists, so.
Brianna, you have experience with, your niece has showed remarkable insight into the abolition of immigration detention and what have you, right?
Yes. I've read about this before. My niece is when she learned that children were detained as like a 4-year-old was immediately horrified by this and has had a lot of plans for jailbreaks and actual like destruction of prisons that have just naturally come to her mind since then. I do also want to say, in kind of a different vein, I very much endorse this whole kids are right about lots of shit, like, you know, fuck the man kind of thing. The other thing though is too, when people dismiss ideas as childish, it's usually because they don't want to do fucking work.
Yeah.
Like, it's usually a ploy to be like, oh, fuck, we have to, like, do research and have meetings and, like, talk to people and, like, come up with plans. Like, it's like nobody wants to do that. So they, when they say, in the same way that, like, you know, when your kid wants to go on a vacation and you don't want to have to, like, go through the hassle, you tell them no. Like, you know, when you say you want, like, universal health care, they're like, shit, that would require us to actually do something. So, of course, you say you can't.
Yeah, it's a big fucking cop-out.
And not just do something, but do adult work, like meetings and other shit that sucks. So it's actually like the ask that you behave in a more adult way is what gets called childish, paradoxically.
And the bar is really low, especially for people like in like legal policy worlds. Like, the number of times people are like, something is impossible, and you're like, for the specific thing I'm asking for, you literally just would need to go into a room and sign some papers. So, like, then when you get into, like, stuff that's, like, you know, would be actual work, of course they're going to say they can't do it, but they can.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, it's just, like, I think that people probably get into a habit where it's much easier to find problems with things. I don't know. I see this in kind of, like, legal workplaces, right? Where, like, the mature thing to do is to point out all the risks. And you know, it's like, this is the thing that kind of gets rewarded, is if you can say, well, if we do this, then this might happen and this might happen. And you know, it's like you never really get rewarded for being like, okay, but maybe we should try it anyway, even though that's the thing that actually gets shit done. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think like at least the thing that I've been trying to do is behave more like a child, especially when people make this accusation, to just keep asking them why. Like, why do you think that? Like, why do you think that's true? Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? Because you get to the bottom very, very fast. And it ends up just being like, that's not what we do. And like,
because I said so.
I was kind of hoping that you were going to say that you had started like screaming and pooping yourself in meetings at work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just, really like, sad that that's not what you meant.
Lay down, stomp the feet, stop breathing.
Charlie specifically, like your own child, just blow out a fucking diaper.
That's right. That's right. Well, she's much more cooperative than I am planning to be when I return to work at some point in the future. Who knows when that'll be?
Give her a year or so. Once she can talk and move around a little more, she's going to have a lot of opinions.
That's true.
She wants to
you know, I hope so. Right?
When
like
student debt, she's going to lose it. She's going to lose it.
All coercion must be justified, and I think children understand this much more than adults do.
I mean, I feel like when I was a kid, like the worst and shittiest part about being a kid was when I wanted to do things. Like when I was like, I want to make a gigantic blanket fort and then have a wedding for all of my hamsters in it. And why can't we do this? Or I guess all of the turtles. I want to have a blanket fort and I want to bring all the turtles in from outside and have them wed in it. And why can't we do it?
Why can't you though?
There's no physical obstacle to that.
Like, why? Legalized turtle weddings.
why legalize turtle weddings? Love is love. And so I just...
It's going in the magazine.
Macklemore. Yeah, and my parents were always like, oh, no, 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 no. And I was like, but why? Why not? And they were like, oh, that's just so complicated. I'm like, you just take the turtles and then you just... and then they wed. And so, you know, it's like...
You gotta get the marriage licenses. It's a whole thing. You gotta go sign some papers. You have to get a room.
You gotta find a turtle who's ordained as a priest. Like, where are you gonna find that a single afternoon?
But yeah, and so that was like the most frustrating thing to me about being a kid is that like I wanted to do something that made like perfect sense to me and to the turtles, my constituents, and to my comrade, the turtles. And yeah, and you know, the adults were just like, oh, no. For like the vaguest bullshit reasons.
I just like child Kate with their turtle constituents. My constituents.
My cold-blooded comrades. But like sweat. Yeah, no. And so I mean, and then when I was working in childcare, when I was a nanny, I had found that I had to fight really hard against that impulse when the girl I was taking care of would be like, oh, I want to go out to the park and I want to catch bugs. And then I want to make really teeny dresses and put them on the bugs. And I was like, oh, no. We know we can't do that. And she'd be like, but why? And I'd be like, you know what? Because I'm boring. Because I am on Twitter. Because college sucked my soul out like a freaking Slurpee straw. That's why. And it just, that sucks, you know? And so it's really weird trying to like fight back against that thing you hated so much as an adult. And I feel like that feeling from childhood is just constantly with me every single day. Yeah. When people are like, we just can't. And I just feel like 5-year-old Kate with like turtles being like, now kiss. Like, like why? This, like, why this, fucking can we?
This is like exactly Lyta's point though, right? Because like basically the response is because I want to do something else. Right? Like, I don't want to. Like, I don't want to do that. That's not, like, I don't want to clean up the turtle shit. It's not worth having a turtle wedding to me if I have to clean up the turtle shit from the wedding.
Yeah. To be clear, when you become a parent, you do not forfeit your selfhood and your right to do things that you want to do and become a slave to your child's whims. So yeah. there is that. But there's, like, a hierarchy of explanations, right? Which is, like, you know, like, that's gonna get you killed. That's gonna kill all the turtles. I don't have time to clean the house because these are all the other things that I am actually doing. And like, the thing is, like, policymakers sometimes like pretend to provide those explanations, but most of the time they don't even bother to do that much. They're just like, you can't do it because money, ?
And what you want to do is relevant too, right? Like, I mean, not saying the turtle weddings aren't very important, which obviously they're very, very important, but like, you know, preventing people from dying, like that maybe justifies some higher costs, you would think. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Sparky, like, what you said about, like, just, like, trying to be more childish and, like, thinking and acting like a child is, like, really important and, like, what we do. I mean, I don't think that, like, Current Affairs would be even a little bit the magazine that it is if Nathan wasn't, you know, constantly trying really hard to think like a child and was, like, not surrounded by toys all the time in his office and, like, messing around with blocks and shit, you know? It's like, it's worth it to like play and think like that.
You guys, like, Kate is not exaggerating. Like,
no,
should
for people who haven't read our print edition, I make dioramas for the table of contents out of small objects where each object represents an article. I was very, very, very fortunate as a child. One of the ways in which I was most privileged is to have parents who never told me things that I came up with were impossible. And my parents are lovely people, but the thing that I am most grateful to is that when I came up with a ridiculous thing, they would go, okay, let's think about how we're going to do it.
Like starting a magazine.
I remember as a kid, like, I wanted to build an entire cable car system, like a public transit system for within our house, you know, out of string and Lego. And we did it. I had to take it down eventually, but you know, when I wanted to start like a public access TV show, they're like, well, we'll paint the garage wall blue and it'll be a blue screen and then you can do it in there. And that sort of stuff, you know, that kind of encouragement I then took. And so when the magazine, lots of people said, oh, well, a print magazine in 2015 is just a horrible, stupid idea. That sounds like the route to failure. But, you know, it wasn't, because if you looked at the facts, and this is an important thing, is like, it doesn't mean that nothing is impossible. It doesn't mean that there aren't impractical things. But when we looked at the facts of the economics of a magazine, it turns out that, you know, you look at the numbers and it's just it is possible to build a small independent institution. And the same is true with a lot of policy where, you know, for the like single payer healthcare is tried and tested. That's like the most conservative, like tried and tested in, you know, dozens of countries around the world, right? And one of the things that I think we ought to do in order to combat the accusation of childishness is, in addition to saying, well, you know, children are good, to not give any grounds for people saying that we are impractical, you know, come back with like, okay, but I have a dozen studies. You have nothing. I like to impersonate an adult. I like to go, look, I've got my tie on. I've got my mountain of evidence. I've got my arguments laid out. I've responded to all your points. What do you want? And so if there's a demand that like, oh, adults come with whatever, adults come with a peer-reviewed study. Well, you show up with a peer-reviewed study, right? Thinking things through practically in terms of how they would work, as we said, you know, that is important. But you can do that and still reject the idea that it's mature to not have the aspiration to do anything significant.
So we all want to be like child geniuses from like a kid's book series. Like you want the mind of a child, but like the command of policy of a very well-informed adult,
and the willingness to go out on adventures that a child has after dark. I think one thing it really is important to come down to, like, for when an adult says, I don't want to do something to a kid, or you shouldn't do that, it's ultimately the reason behind the why is because I said so. It's always, you know, why are things this way? Because I said so. Why can't I do this? Because I said so. And that's ultimately, like it does help to, you know, bring your charts and graphs and explain things, but you are coming up against because I said so always in any situation rather than, like, anything that's rational. So I don't think it hurts to argue rationally, but it helps to remember that you're not, just because the person that you're arguing with who's standing in the way of good policy is pretending to be an adult and they're saying that they care about reason doesn't mean that they're rational at all. They're not even a little bit, because the foundation of what they're talking about is power. And the reason we don't have universal healthcare isn't because the argument isn't, you know, the argument's extremely easy to make and the data's all there. We don't have it because it's inconvenient for some people to have it because they have money and power and stuff invested in things being the way that they are. So yeah, so you to overcome because I said so, you have to be persistent and creative.
So dismantle the parental monopoly on violence is what you're saying.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay, on to the next voicemail. Thank you.
Frogs? Frogs?
Responding to our turtle wedding segment. Wanting to know when frog wedding. Why not now?
What the shit?
So if I understand...
This actually goes on for a long time. Panel, thoughts?
Yeah. I think I got it.
I think I need to hear more. I mean, I haven't heard their whole... That was just the intro.
We're not going to hear anymore.
We encourage other animals to call in and give their thoughts.
Well, I've there was a thing in the last magazine about how we were trying to appeal more to an animal audience through content that and clearly we're beginning to succeed. So I don't understand the caller, but I am glad the caller's there, and we appreciate them.
No non-human animal has ever written an article for us, so if you are a non-human animal listening right now, please pitch to us.
Yeah, and to be clear, that's on us. That's not on you.
Please use our pitch form.
But, you know, we want you to submit.
But we encourage you to use the pitch form.
Okay. And with that.
Hey, current affairs. Calling from beautiful Bellingham, Washington. With a burning question, is the self real? I've been pondering this for 3 years, and I'm an idiot, and every time I think I've decided one way or the other for myself, I change my mind the next day. Yeah, does the self exist? Is it a social construct? Does it matter if it exists? I don't know. Want to hear some smart people talk about it. All right, bye.
Okay, smart people. Is the self real? Who got this one?
Who would come to us with that? I mean, like, I appreciate this, you know, the listener reaching out, but, like, are we qualified for this one?
Are we qualified for any of them?
That's true, actually. We're qualified for anything about turtle weddings, I feel pretty good about. Anything
yeah,
else,
that was one I felt that was, like, definitely in our wheelhouse, but yeah. This, I don't know.
Come on, some of you have to have thoughts on the self.
Sparky, you're a philosophy major. What's the self?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, come on, processes things, guy. You have an opinion on this.
Yeah, surely. No, I definitely have an opinion. I definitely have an opinion, which is that there's no coherent thing that you can refer to as the self. I think that some people probably have a stronger kind of like sense of self and personal narrative than other people. I think like if we're talking about kind of metaphysically, no, there's probably nothing that is a self. It's a nice construct that we make for ourselves in order to function and like have subjects and objects and sentences and stuff. But
is it any less real for being a construct?
Yeah, that's still real.
Okay, well, then we can talk about what real means. I don't really think that's very interesting. Yeah, no, I don't know. Like, I think, so for myself, for example, I feel like I have anywhere between, like, 10 and 100 different people living in my head. And, you know, I feel like some people see certain actions or things that they do, and they're like, oh, you know, this is not consistent with who I am. And I've never had that sense. Like, I'm a total jumble. Anything would be consistent, unfortunately.
So I'm not good at philosophy. And the reason is that for me, I get really stuck on the balls test, which is what I call if pretty much any philosophical question, I tend to come back with, okay, but if I were to kick you in the balls, how would you respond? So like, you're like, okay, I don't have a coherent self, but if I were to kick you in the balls, mm-hmm. you would be really upset and in pain because you're hurt, because your self is hurt. You don't know why I just did that. That was so mean. So, like, it seems to me like a lot of philosophical concepts fall down of the ball test.
Do the balls have selves?
Well, that's a good question. But here's the thing. In the immediate moment where I've kicked you in the balls,
uh-huh.
do your balls think separately than the rest of you? Or is it indeed one coherent, ow, shit?
I assume that this works because every time someone poses this question to you, they are a person with balls.
Yes, yes, that's why it's gender.
You know, one of the most illuminating intellectual experiences that I've had was in college when I read a couple it was not being kicked in the balls, so did happen once. I encountered a couple of essays by the pragmatist philosophers William James and Charles Peirce, and one of the things that's so nice about the pragmatists is that they teach you to ask about philosophical questions like this. Well, what do you mean by these things? When you say what is the self real, the first question you ask is, well, what do you mean? Is it real, right? What do you like? It's real if you define reality one way. It's not real if you define real. And a lot of this is about, a lot of philosophical questions are really questions about how we should define the words we use. But they seem like they're questions about the underlying reality of the world. But really, we're just saying, like, what kinds of categories, you know, invented word categories that we have, should we apply to the world? So a question like, is the self real, doesn't really mean much to me until I know what the caller means by the self and real.
Yeah, and I think it's also, like, whether you're kind of internally or externally defining the self, because, like, you know, you might be a person who feels like you're sort of always in flux and, like, constantly changing, but chances are, for example, someone who's, like, one of your family members who's observed you over time, like, has observed, like, a stable set of traits in you that have been persistent across all those years. By the other token, you may have, like, an internal self that is not easily accessible to other people that you feel like has been consistent but is not observable to others, or you might have none of those things, but it's just, like, it's a very kind of wobbly concept.
Yeah.
Are we saying, is there a consistent set of traits that you display over time that we can, and if so, then yes, clearly.
Yes, clearly. Always.
Well, some people, because some people less than others, but
if that's what we're asking when we ask what is the self real, right? I mean, what are we asking?
So Sparky is early in the first part of what you said narrative, personal narratives, and I think that's like an important key to understanding what's at stake, because there's a big difference even between a really well written character on a page and a person. And a person, people don't have narratives; they make up narratives to explain themselves. But because they don't have narratives like a character does, doesn't mean that they don't have a self. It's just that how we describe and explain characters in fiction, or even in nonfiction, is just a different way in which we experience the world, because it's an artistic form and it's not a one-to-one exact thing. So, but like, you know, my little nieces and nephews, they were distinct people from like the minute they were born. Their personalities were like very clear, and their personalities are going to grow and change. They're going to be very different people when they're grown-ups. And I probably won't be able to sign a coherent narrative from beginning to end, but they are selves. And you can just sort of like, whether they think that internally, I can't say, but like I can say externally in a way that I couldn't describe. If I tried to describe it in fiction, I would like, you know, I'd have to cut corners and give it a narrative and give it like a shape, but they're still like people, and they distinctly feel like people. And it's very hard to explain, but they have a distinct bounded self, and that's just how I feel. I can't prove it, but I just feel it.
Sparky, can I ask you, like, when were you like hit with the weight of like Charlie's self?
I don't think I have been. I don't know. I'm probably colored by the fact that I don't really believe in a... So the internal-external question is relevant, right? And like, I think that people probably do have like tendencies that persist over time, or sometimes don't. It's just, you know, I like, people definitely have personalities. People have traits. I am just very hesitant to say that like there is some constant core, either internally or externally, that persists no matter what, right? I kind of think of it more as just kind of like a jumble of related things. So, you know, I haven't been struck. I mean, the baby, you know, she doesn't like say anything. Basically, you know, she just started kind of cooing. She mostly like cries, and she gives looks, and she, you know, she got some pretty good looks, but
she got great looks.
Yeah, you know, she's like
withering stares. She's mastered the
yeah, I mean, I could ascribe all kinds of internal states to her, which some of them might be true and some of them might not, but she's mostly just like a little wild animal.
Wild animals are selves.
Yeah, and yourself as a little child may have absolutely no resemblance to like yourself. Like I was like a terrified child who cried all the time, like that, like none of those traits of character.
And the shit can change, right? Like, I mean, you know, trauma, whether like physical or non-physical, can alter significant parts about you. I don't know. It just seems like maybe we're big jumbly combinations of things with no constant nucleus, but that's just me.
I mean, the constant nucleus is like your brain, like, not to get back to like the balls issue that I always have with philosophy, but like yourself or whatever you want to think about is contained within a brain and a nervous system that is contained within one body. And you're affected and influenced by other things, but like it is a centrally located thing. There is a core of a thing. Nothing can be rewired and changed, but it's still there.
I was actually talking about this with my partner Jack literally last night, because we were talking about what like a worrier I am. And we were just talking about it. And I was like, you know, I've always been this way ever since I was really, really little. Like, my mom has this story about when I had like just started like walking and like talking in full sentences, where we were like playing on the floor and I like got up to leave the room to go do something. And I turned around, like my little tiny baby self was like, "Don't worry, I'll be right back." Like, I was so worried that she'd be worried, you know, and I'm still that way. And that was me when I was like very, 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 very small. And so it's like, there has to be some kind of like not changing. There has to be some kind of stable core. And I don't really ever doubt that. That's like a pretty constant belief that I have. But what my problem is that I don't understand whether that is really comforting or like really terrifying.
Yeah.
I think maybe the reason we ask the question whether or not you have a self is we want to know whether people are responsible for their actions. And the answer is yes. So
I see. I would say no.
You know, they're totally responsible for their actions. You're responsible, are you? Okay. So if I were to kick you in the balls, you can't be mad at me because I'm not responsible for my actions.
I wouldn't be mad at you anyway.
All right, well, we're going to test this next time I see you.
Okay, wait. I have one more thing I wanted to bring up on this based on what Lyta just said, which is like, I think you're right that a lot of it has to do with like ascribing responsibility. But if I think to like, I don't know, my 18-year-old self.
You're what?
I feel like a completely different, like in almost any given situation, I would interact and react completely differently from how that dude would now. And so it feels a little bit weird to be like, yeah, but you know, that was me. Well, yeah, it was like my constant physical body in some sense, I guess, although most of my body has changed since then. But like, that's like that, you know, what does it mean to kind of be a moral agent? I kind of think of it as, well, you know, how do you interact with the world, and what do you do in various situations? And in that sense, this seems like a completely different person. And I would be kind of like, I would be kind of frustrated if you were like, you know, I understand why people say, well, yeah, but you're responsible because it's still you. But it also kind of doesn't make sense because it's not me.
I mean, I love this because then I wouldn't like think constantly about all the embarrassing shit I said or did in high school, which is just the thing that occupies my mind at all times.
Oh yeah, I don't think about that at all. I did and said all kinds of incredibly embarrassing shit, and it never crosses my mind because that just feels like a totally different person.
I love this. I love this. Complete abdication of responsibility. I'm on board. Sounds great.
But like, what's the point of the responsibility, I guess? Like, what
is it? Still my memories. I still did it.
So
something did it.
I think things is one of those things where like concepts like self and free will that are kind of vague and hard to define, but clearly are like relevant to some aspects of our self-conception. They're tricky, right? Because on the one hand, like you kind of have to assume that they exist in some sense in order to function effectively with other people. But like the extreme of assuming them that they're too real ends up with stuff like, you know, lifetime incarceration of people for crimes they committed when they're a teenager. But the extreme of assuming they're not real is when people are super abusive and get away with it all the time because they constantly claim that, like, they've changed or they're not responsible for their past actions, which is a thing that, like, people use as a manipulative tactic all the time. So, like, you have to have some kind of middle ground where you're like, yeah, you know, might not be totally real. People might not be completely responsible. There's probably some variation between people. But if you throw it completely out the window, you're also going to end up in a really bad place. So
that seems like a very practical answer based on the fact that sometimes people lie, right? Either lie to others or to themselves.
I mean, of course.
That's hard to determine, though. Do they have a self? Can you lie to yourself if you don't have a self? Or did I just fucking blow your mind?
It's impossible to tell when, both sometimes when people are lying to you and also whether they know that they're lying to you. So you just have to like make certain assumptions or just like, I guess, let people like fucking take advantage of you all the time.
I mean, I guess it's just weird that like, I don't know, it's a little bit weird to me that this very practical like decision, kind of cost benefit decision, then ends up informing what we think is real in the world.
It's true. That's most reasonable. Parts of being a person.
We make our concepts based on their consequences. I you all feel like you've changed significantly. I don't feel like I've changed.
Well,
since
of course
I
you haven't.
Was, well, I came out this way. I don't. Like, there's been no significant change at
your
any
mom,
point.
Your mom sent me a picture of you at 1 year old, and it is very clearly Nathan. There is no doubt about it.
I have never noticed a single change.
Sure.
The sweater. Yeah, the sweater picture. Yes. Okay. On to the last voicemail, which I feel like is more of an FYI than a discussion piece. But if you all want to discuss, then I think we should give it a shot.
Hi, Current Affairs. First time, long time. Love the show and the print magazine so very much. During a recent segment, Ashling mentioned wanting websites that are good for when you're trying to avoid your emails and social media, but you're still on the computer. And so I would humbly like to submit a website that I built for your consideration, metromapmaker.com. You can design the Metro map of your dreams, remix maps that other people have made, download them as images to send to your friends and lovers, and you can also browse some really impressive and implausible maps that other people have made in the gallery. The reason I built Metro Map Maker was because, like many of you, I really think that if we can imagine that a better world is possible, then that is the first step towards fighting for it. And I hope that my website can help people to demand the impossible and build new transit systems that are founded on equity and justice. Besides, if we're ever going to save ourselves from climate devastation, transit is going to be very important. Since I launched in 2017, people have made and remixed over 50,000 maps, places all over the world. And I've collected my favorite 1,000 or so in the gallery. Anyways, I hope you check it out. Maybe you won't have a transcendental experience, but then again, maybe you will. Thank you for all that you do.
All right, metromapmaker.com. I can see all of you going there right now.
I'm on it.
There's
right
already
now,
one for San Antonio. How nice.
I've already built my first line, subway line, which is next to a park. You can put rivers and parks. So you can basically design a city if you don't want to use an existing one.
That's beautiful.
Our listeners are so cool. They're the coolest people.
Sometimes I think they're like way cooler than us.
Yeah, I really hope they don't figure it out.
So I like to do, I don't know. I don't know if you guys think that this is worth talking about or not. Maybe there's a little bit of a tie-in here with the children thing, which is that it's very valuable to play. And it's very cool, like when people make these sort of these tools that you can literally just like play around with and come up with ideas, because I feel like that's actually, that's largely how kids learn. And that's probably like, I think adults would probably learn a lot more if we could still find it within ourselves to play rather than see everything as work and labor and very important and high stakes and all that bullshit.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
There's a tweet the other day that I got mad at because it was like, he was talking about how, you know, it's important if you're a creative person to rest, because when you rest up, then you get like, it helps your creativity and you get more good ideas. And it's like, this is the absolute wrong idea to have. I know. Well, it's just like, maybe you just play with stuff, because even this, like a map making, like there is a practical purpose here and get people to think about things. But also maybe you just do things because they're fun and it has no purpose. It doesn't even necessarily rest you up for another task, you know, of creating more content, but just. Because it's fun and it's nice to play with things and it's nice to think about the world in big ways. And like, yes, maybe down the line that does make your brain function better and makes you more imaginative, whatever. But you don't do it for those reasons. Yeah, that's not why. Because you're having fun.
Yeah, just do fun shit.
Yeah, do fun shit. Make maps, marry turtles to each other, not yourselves.
Or to yourself. You know, do what you need to do.
Well,
I
would also add that the right is not unfamiliar with the idea of, you know, encouraging children to play as a means of like indoctrinating them to particular ideas. Like one of the big feeder programs for Border Patrol down here is like, there's this like boy, like basically it's like Boy Scouts, but except you also pretend to be a Border Patrol agent and they like train you on how to like apprehend immigrants. Like this is a huge thing. And like, it's how like you learn that like being a Border Patrol agent is fun from like a young age. I don't think we have anything like that for the left to like, you know, teach people how to like, you know, not be assholes. I don't know. So think about it. If someone wants to invent such a program.
Or should literally just be like being like a streetcar conductor.
Honestly, kids would fucking love that. Oh, hell like yeah. Streetcar conductor camp.
Oh my God. That'd be amazing. Make it happen. Start it.
Current Affairs is a streetcar conductor camp. And we could have cats there too, because cats can conduct streetcars.
Most of the instructors are cats.
I'm already designing the magazine ad in my head. A streetcar conductor camp.
Yeah, Nathan's doing this writing class. Fuck that. What we really need is a children's streetcar conductor camp.
Okay. And everybody is still playing with MetroMapmaker.com. Yeah.
We're going to go.
Worst of the wise, I got stuck on something that's called MetroMaps.com. It's not the same website. No. It's just a bunch of maps of the metro area's map various cities. Maker. So don't fall into my trap.
I really like looking at other people's maps. This one of Europe where all Europe is gridded up with the trains. I just am obsessed with it. It's so good.
I love that, like, this is, like, you can do something that is, like, really cool and amazing, innovative, and, like, she said, like, really, like, picturing a different world with, like, more comprehensive travel, but also, like, I'm literally about to design my dream bar crawl when COVID is over, like, if the street crawl here, and here, and here, and here, and here, and here, and here.
Okay.
This rules.
This does roll. And with that, this concludes our voicemail episode, though we will have another one in the near future. So again, please, 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 please call and leave us voicemail. Please ask us about Nathan's shoes. I've seen Nathan in a number of interesting types of footwear, which he is very rarely shows publicly, you know, and I think we should discuss. The number is 504-867-8851. 504-867-8851. Call.
Nick, show soul.
Sure. Give the show people a pinky. Just one pinky. Goodbye, everyone. Signing off from Kate Gotro.
Hi.
From Light of Gold.
Hi, guys.
Brianna Renix.
Hi.
From Nathan James Robinson.
Good night.
I've been your temporary host, Sparky Abraham. See y'all later.